We are honored today to have a wonderful, wonderful guest speaker. He's a man who knows what he's talking about and has lived his life as the epitome of peace. He was born in 1923 in Belgium, and he was born during a time during much turmoil in the world. He knew the horrors of World War II, and he was a refugee of Nazi occupation and imprisonment. But during the war and afterwards, he went on to earn a doctorate of law from the University of Strasbourg. And in 1948, he entered and won a contest on how to govern the world, the prize of which was an internship at the newly created United Nations. He devoted the next 38 years of his life at the United Nations until his retirement in 1986. He rose up through the ranks there, and he served as Assistant Secretary General to the UN, working directly with three Secretaries General, U Thant, Kurt Waldheim, and Javier Perez de Cuellar. He also is the author of more than 25 books, which have been published in several languages. He is considered the father of global education, and his World Core curriculum is used in an increasing number of schools and universities around the world. There are 43 Robert Mueller schools. He received a UNESCO Peace Education Prize in 1989 and the Albert Schweitzer International Prize for Humanities in 1993 and the Eleanor Roosevelt Man of Vision Award in 1994. And he's also been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. He's now in active retirement. Dr. Mueller is Chancellor Emeritus of the United Nations University for Peace in Costa Rica. Let me tell you a little something. I love Costa Rica. Many of you know I've been there several times and do plan to spend some time there myself. It's interesting that in 1948, Dr. Mueller entered the essay contest and won that prize because it was in 1948 that the government of Costa Rica decided to disband its army. It would no longer have a standing army, and instead put its money in education, in health care, and the environment. When you have the intention, you can accomplish much. And Costa Rica is a very peaceful country, even though Nicaragua with the Sandinistas and other countries in Central America went through turmoil and civil war, Costa Rica, in the midst of it all, with the intention to be a peaceful country, remained peaceful and never had conflict. And so in 1948, we had Costa Rica disbanding their army, we had Dr. Mueller entering the contest, and now we have the University of Peace, of which Dr. Mueller is a co-founder in Costa Rica. So that's how wonderful this all is. He is coming today, being awarded the Millennium Man of the Year by 900 Unity Churches, the God of Light Award. He comes to us today to speak of peace, and he knows of which he speaks. We are so blessed to have Dr. Robert Mueller.
I am so deeply moved by the wonderful elevation of your meetings this morning. And it reminded me that when I was a little boy, I would have liked to learn music. Even I dreamt to be someday a great composer. And my mother said, for heaven's sake, no, I will not allow you to learn music because you would be a musician without any income. And we are already so poor. But my grandfather then helped me and he taught me to play the harmonica. And I've decided to play for you. To participate by playing no less than the Ode to Joy of Beethoven on a 10-hole harmonica. Something very strange. Not to speak about the subject which was put to me, but to tell something which has happened in the last 2 days. Namely, I have always asked myself in recent years, how is it possible that you lived more than 80 years without being killed? In all the adventures in the Second World War, being arrested by the Germans, being put in prison, being a member of the French underground, having seen so many horrors, coming from a region where we knew only wars between France and Germany for hundreds of years, living on that border, how is it that I was saved? How is it that I was constantly elevated to higher objectives? How is it that the son of a poor hatmaker in the poorest street of the little town on the line with Germany, that I became a United Nations official, an assistant secretary general, the right hand of 3 secretary general, being able to do so much for peace in the world. And on the last day of my stay in the United Nations, after having been prolonged by the Secretary General to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the United Nations, I wrote this in my journal. I dream that someday I will live on a mountain with a beautiful view and spend the rest of my life writing the beautiful stories of my life. And how come that someone came and asked me to buy a mountain, which I didn't want at first, by saying, what should I do with a mountain? I'm more than 60 years old. And when I read this sentence, I bought the mountain. And it turned out to be a sacred mountain where there is the prediction that from this mountain and from the University for Peace, next to it, just under it, a civilization of peace will extend to the entire world. And I read most of this story in a book written by a friend of ours in Santa Barbara, who asked me over the years to tell him stories of my life. And he sat down and wrote a book of my life until my arrival in the United Nations. I've read it 4 times. And 2 days, I discovered something very important. Each time I read the book, I cry. I cry for the miseries I have seen. I remember a fundamental decision I took in the French underground, where 20 young Germans were in a farmhouse, and my commander wanted to shoot them out, and I said, "Don't do it, let me talk to them." And I talked to them in German, and I said, "We will not kill you. Hitler tells you that the underground will kill you, but we will not. I promised you to be alive." And the 20 young people surrendered. They were not even soldiers. They were dressed as German soldiers to give the impression in France that the soldiers were still in France. Most of them were Russians, prisoners, and these young people. And then I went with my group for the liberation of Lyon. And when I came back, I learned that all 20 had been killed by my commander. And he said that they had found in another farmhouse all the prisoners of the Fort Montluc in Lyon by a certain guy called Klaus Barbie. And they had put gasoline over all the prisoners and burned them alive. They had nails in their jaws. They had barbed wires around their hands and feet. And he took the 20 young Germans and said, "This is what your Adolf Hitler is doing." And they were pretty proud, and I got them shot. And in the evening, I looked at the moon, and I said, "What are the mothers and fathers doing of these children? They will never come home. We do not even have an address of them. They will wait for months and months, and they will never know how their children were born." And I swore then in the night that I would devote my entire life to peace. And when I came back home, my father was a hat maker, wanted me to be a hat maker. I said, "No, I'm going to be a peacemaker." He said, "That's ridiculous. They do not exist. There are no peacemakers. There are no war. There are only war makers." Well, I went ahead and took a doctorate of law at the University of Strasbourg. And one day again, something happened which changed my life and fulfilled my dream of working for peace. In the train from Strasbourg to my home, I had no readings, but I remembered an announcement at the university of a prize to a student who would write the best essay on how to govern the world. And I said, "My dear friend, that's addressed to you. How would you govern the world in peace?" So I sat down, wrote the essay, sent it in, won, and went as a prize to the United Nations. And I had all my life there. But still I asked myself, why? Why was that? And it was Douglas Gillis in this book who revealed it to me. Namely, that when I was a little boy, I always repeated my fundamental view as a little boy, 5 years old, that life, human life, is a miracle. And I elevated my thoughts to the heavens. I couldn't understand that we had a border, that the people on the other side were enemies. Their names were also Müller Schneider, and they spoke the same dialect as we did. Why are these borders there? And as a child, I wished that this border would disappear. And I thought to myself, I have to do something for peace. I took my cap up when I saw old people. And my father said, "What do you do?" I said, "Because these people know so much." And I hope that someday I will be very old and I will know as much as they know today. That was revealed to me by Douglas, that I had this ingredient to me when I was a child. I went to the church, the very early church in the morning when you had only old people and invalids who were there. And when the host was lifted, I shouted, "Das Leben ist göttlich." Life is divine. And it was this from the childhood on which has been helped, which has been fomented, which has made my life an incredible miracle. I was never shot. I was always released despite the prisons and everything. I was always elevated to something else. I was elevated then on the last day when I left the UN. There was no interval. I was asked to create a university for peace and demilitarized Costa Rica. And it goes on, it never ends. And I have duties larger and broader than anything on earth through this university for peace. So here I am on the eve of being 81 years old, without any sickness, feeling younger than ever, having had two incredible companions in my life, my first wife from Chile, who never allowed me to leave the United Nations and to make more money in a corporation, never. And now Barbara, who is here, who elevates me, she is younger than I, and she makes me work and believe in myself, never to give up. She even asked me a few years ago to write down all my ideas. And she published now my over 6,000 ideas for a better world. And now I'm working on the 7,000. In a plane from Costa Rica, I wrote 18 pages of ideas which I will include. And it's not me. It is this force. It is this will. It is this absolute heart of humanity and of the planet, that we cannot kill this planet, that we are all made of the planet, that we should return to the planet, return to her, not in a casket, but return to be reborn in other species. This is an incredible experience, and it goes on, it makes progress year after year. The border in my hometown, all the borders between Western Europe have disappeared. My friend Robert Schuman, who had the same problem, became a minister and decided to create a united Europe despite all the circumstances. And when I told him, "Why were you able to do this?" And he said, "Because when I was a minister of foreign affairs, someone brought me a plan which I was to sign, called the Schuman Plan, for a united Europe, starting with coal and steel, then economics. It took 42 years until the European community was created." And he said, "And I didn't know what to do with it. I was living with the nuns because I always wanted to be a monk myself. And then one morning I woke up and I remembered that as a child, at the Dreigrenzenecke, the place where you have the borders of France, Germany, and Luxembourg, when I was riding my bicycle, I was always running into a border, into a control. And I swore to myself as a little boy that if I would have the opportunity of getting these borders suppressed, I will do it. And when I remembered that dream, I went to my office and I signed the plan without even further reading it. And it is the Schuman Plan, which, thanks to the remembrance of a little boy who has made this miracle, that countries have been killing each other. You should read the book about the First World War in Douglas Gillis' book, and the Second World War, that white people, highly civilized, could treat each other the way the French and the Germans did at that time. when I read it, I almost cannot believe it, that I lived there, that we did this. And we continue to do it. The U.S. is doing it in Vietnam. They're doing it now in Iraq. We absolutely must get on this planet to must eradicate all wars. We must transform the militaries into peace agents, together like a police helping people. And we must suppress all armaments. This is an absolute duty for which I will continue to fight, and I hope that God will give me more years to do it. What I learned from Douglas Gillis' book is that I was too slow. And we have made very, very much progress, but it has to be quicker. We have to do this. We have to make out of this planet a paradise, which it is. And I will now submit at the University for Peace a plan for absolute demilitarization by the year 2010, a peace plan for this year. And that to conceive that by the year 2020, we should have a paradise earth where there will be no longer any wars and all the destructions of the planet which we are doing. This is my life, my dear friends. And I was so grateful to hear the beautiful statements. I think we have all the same minds. And the same heart. I'm a member of the canonization of Robert Schumann. We want to make him a saint. And what have we discovered in his speeches and writings? The following. He said the end of the conflict is not the end of it. A conflict must be continued by cooperation. And cooperation is not enough. It has to be followed by love. And we do not speak enough about love in our political world. We have to restore love as the principal instrument to make this a paradise and a warless planet. Thank you very much. Well, it is quite an experience to review one's life and to ask oneself how one can be blessed by the most extraordinary events and upliftings if you deeply believe in something. If you ask yourself, when I was born, when I was a kid, what did I believe? What was my value in all the values around me? And I remember that when I was 5 years old, I considered that life was a miracle. To be alive was something incredible for me. To see the skies, to see the animals, to see the birds, to see a river, everything for me was a wonder. That was my attitude as a little child. And I was told that this was not correct. I was told that the river I saw was not to be crossed, because on the other side lived Germans. But we also spoke German, and the names were Müller, Schneider, and so on. Why can I not cross this border? They are enemies. We have to hate them. We have to fight them. I couldn't believe it. And as a child, I looked at the moon, at the sun, at the clouds, at the birds, And I said, why can they cross the border? And I cannot cross that border. And in the family, what did I hear? The pictures in the evening of the first photograph taken. And I saw my father once a German soldier and once a French soldier. And I asked him, how is that possible? He said, because here in this region, we are always divided by the French and the Germans. And then the French come and they give us a gun to kill the Germans. And then the Germans, they win and they give us a gun to kill the French. And again, as a child, I couldn't get it. What kind of a world is this? And it went on like this. For example, one of my uncles showed me, I asked him, were you in the war? He said, yes. I was in the trenches of Verdun, where we were in those trenches for days and days and days in the cold and being killed. Then they have a whistle and where they get out and they put our bayonets into the belly of the French. And we knew that we would all die there. There is now in France a monument where you have the bones of hundreds of thousands of people who were died in Verdun. I saw it. And I say in the United Nations that if a country wants to have another war with them, they should be locked up in this place to live there for a whole day with the bones of people who have been killed for nothing. And one of my uncles then said, you know, we wanted to live. So I asked my friend here, why don't you shoot me into my hand? And you could still see the wound. And I shot into his leg. And then we were returned from the battle. And I'm alive today because we did that. And there was another uncle of mine who never went to church on Sunday. And I said, but look, my aunt is so deeply Catholic. Why don't you go to church on Sunday? And then he told me the following story. I said, I too was in the trenches of Verdun. And we were dreaming of the day when they would take us back and let us fall down on hay and straw to sleep. And then when we were taken back, what did we have to go? We had to go to a church to listen to a German priest who told us that we had to kill the French in the name of God. And I swore that I would never set my foot in a church anymore. This was my youth. What can you do under such circumstances? And then the Germans came and occupied us. What horrors we saw there. And then the fact that they wanted to mobilize us into their German army. All the tricks we had to find not to be mobilized, because if I fled to France, they would have taken the whole family and put them into Poland and Russia. So we had to postpone the moment of being drafted into the German army. And thanks God to a good Catholic from the Rhineland who told my father when the next order to go to the army came in, we had all kinds of tricks. Let me give you a few. One day, he said, look, you're not yet quite ready to go into the German army, but what you could do is that since they are so stupid, why don't you get some glasses which are so big that you cannot see through them? So I got them done by the local guy who still was able to do that, and I went to the drafting committee. And then the guy says, take off your glasses. I cannot see this. Can you read this? No. Put on your glasses. I could neither because the glasses were too thick. So you know what this idiot did? He says, this guy needs sharper glasses. And the guy who then decided whether I should go to the army, I said, look, my God, you would kill your friend instead of killing the Germans. So I was postponed for a few months. Then when they had another one, I remembered that the good German from the Rhineland said, you are going to get a draft into the German army by such a date. What can we do? He said, well, they will still put your parents into Poland if you do something now. Do you have a doctor you can trust? Yes, we have Dr. Friedrich, who's of my village, said my father. Well, talk to him to see if you cannot get you operated on the day when the draft comes, because then they cannot send you to the army. So the doctor said to me, Robert, the Germans, they observe me. They do not trust me. But could you press your appendix place here every day to make it hurt? Because maybe we will have a good role to operate you. So I was pressing this every day, said, okay. And I felt some pain. And then finally, when we learned that the order to go to the army would come, I went to the hospital, and Dr. Friedrich operated me. And there were Germans watching there to see if the operation was right. And he said to me, you cannot imagine my pleasure when I took out of you the most infected, biggest appendix I've ever seen in my life. And the Germans then said, okay, that's fine. And I was again postponed. I have written all these things. I could give you dozens of them. And finally, I escaped. And I worked in the French underground. And I got a new name of a guy who existed, Louis Parisot. So from German, I became Louis Parisot. And I worked in an old hotel where General Pétain got still something of the French government. And I had learned also in the meantime that I should never give up. Never give up. And I have to tell you this story too, because it's not a bad one. It has even been reproduced in a book called, what is it called? Oh, something, well, it doesn't matter. So I was sitting in my office one morning in the city of Vichy, and my secretary said, there are some gentlemen who would like to see you at the entrance. And I said, gentlemen who want to see me? I'm a little suspicious. I'm going to go to the office of so-and-so and let me know what the whole thing is. And then she called a little later and she said, there are policemen, three policemen who want to see Mr. Parisot. Well, the policemen, of course, were Germans. So they had found my trace. And then I said to my friend, I'm going to go to the attics of this hotel, because it was a former hotel, and let me know what's going on. And he came and he said, the Germans are in the house. All the officials have to come out of the offices. And they know that you are here. They're very calm. And there's nothing I can suggest to you. So I said to myself, to go on the roof, they shoot you down. So that's excluded. To roll myself into the carpets of the hotel up there in the attics will not work either, because the Germans are very, very thorough. They are going to unfold all the carpets to find me. What could I do with the Germans, which perhaps I couldn't do with the French? The French are smart. The Germans are a little like this. So I said, first of all, I have to put myself into a good mood. Isn't this incredible that at the age of 18, the Germans are after me? This is fantastic. This is incredible. And I put myself into a beautiful view. My God, am I lucky that at my age I have such incredible adventures. I smiled, I whistled, and I said, okay, now we are in a good mood. Let's see what I can do. And then I was thinking very rationally, and I said, the Germans are a little dumb. With the French, you would never get away with it. But let me try the following. Why not walk down to them? Change your glasses, change your hair, put a file from the office down there, and more than arrest you, they cannot do. In any ways, they're going to get you. And you have to get out of here. So I went the big staircases down. And then on the second floor, I saw some bald heads. I said, those must be the Germans. So I went to them. And they were shaking my secretary. Said, if you do not tell us where Parizo is, we will get you killed, you know. And then I asked my secretary, what's going on? Oh, they're looking for Parizo. I said, Parizo, I just saw him on the fourth floor. And the whole Germans went to the fourth floor. And I took a bicycle and I went away. And then I thought that I will have to go to the French people in the underground. And I was there in the underground with many, many adventures. For example, one day, my commander had a group of Germans they wanted to kill. And then I talked to this group. There were nine people. And they didn't speak German. Almost no German. I said, no, they're not Germans, these guys. They were Russians, which the Germans had made prisoner, gave them German uniforms so that France would still have the impression that there were German troops in France. They were Russians. And then I was put in charge to have my nine Russians. And I spoke German to them, and they knew some German, and that is how we lived during this affair. And sometimes during the war, I got a gun in my back. We heard you speak Germans. You are Germans. No, they are Russians. Oh, my dear, adventures I had. And one of them decided me for the rest of my life. It was the fact that at one point there were 20 young Germans in a farmhouse who were supposed to shoot with the French. And I said to my commander, let me speak to those young Germans. And I told them in German that Hitler was not right when he said that that the underground would kill them. I guarantee you that you will be safe. And they surrendered. So there were 20 young Germans who surrendered at my appeal. And I was very happy, and they were very happy. And then I had to go with my Russian group to get to help in the liberation of Lyon. And here something historical happened, is that the commander in my group had found Germans in an automobile who were trying to go towards Lyon, and they had them killed on the spot. And he gave me the wallets and the portfolios of these people to look who they were. And it was such a sad thing to see the wives, the children, and that they had died. And I didn't know what to do, but at one point I said, let me tear off billfolds to see if there's nothing hidden in there. And then I saw that they had the orders, the detail that the Germans were not going to defend the city of Lyon but were retreating to the north. And then I said to my commander, this is of vital importance because the American army of General Patch, which is going to Lyon with the French to save Lyon, they will not have anyone. They could go straight up and not lose their time in Lyon. And the Germans blew all the bridges. And many years later, in a United Nations meeting, there was an American officer with whom I spoke. And then he said, oh, where are you from? Oh, from Alsace-Lorraine. And he said, oh, I remember we had something very important that happened. Namely, we got the message from the underground group near Lyon, which gave us the positions of the Germans. And thanks to this information, we were able to go straight up north, and probably the war has been shortened by 2 or 3 days thanks to this information. And I said to him, you know what the information was? And I gave him the detail. How do you know? I said, I was the guy who found the detail in the thing. Can you imagine? And I had stories and stories like this, one after the other. And finally, when I came home, I learned that my father and the family had not been deported because it was too late, but they had spent 8 months in prison. And I would have surrendered to the Germans if I had known it. And my mother said, "And you never told us that you were in the French underground." I said, "Well, what would you have felt if you knew this?" So then my father said, "Okay, I'm very happy that you're back here. Now you're going to be a hat maker. I trained you fully. And you're going to take over the business." I said, "I will never be a hat maker. I'm going to be a peacemaker." "You're crazy. That doesn't exist. You must be totally mad. They are making wars, but they do not make peace. How can you want to be peacemakers?" I said, "I don't care. But I swore to those 20 young Germans who had been killed while I was away and whose parents would never know what happened to them, I've sworn to them in the night, in the moon, near the cemetery, I swore to them that I would work for peace. So I'm going to be a peacemaker." "Oh, you are looking at Strasbourg." Got there a doctorate of law and thought that I would settle down to become a politician. Okay. One day then, I had forgotten to have some reading material in the train coming home from Strasbourg to my hometown. And it was very long because the bridges were half destroyed. It was, instead of 1 hour, it took 4 hours to get home. And I had nothing to do. And then I remembered seeing an announcement at the University of Strasbourg by the French government, a prize to the student who would write the best essay on how would you govern the world. So after a while I said, "You know, you want to make peace, you should write that essay." And I went home and I devoted my views to this. I wrote it. I sent it in, and I won the prize. And the prize of it was to enter the United Nations as an intern. Can you imagine? My mother didn't want to let me go. She said, "Those planes are very dangerous." My father said, "You have to become a hat maker like all of us in the family." You see? And I said to him, "But look, the French women don't wear hats anymore. They have now build-ups of their hair, and they just, well, I'm going to lose my time as a hat maker." So finally, I left to New York, and we were in a factory of armaments in Lake Success, among the very first few people. And I remember a British delegate asking me, "What are you doing here, young man?" And I said, "I've come here to work for peace because I do not want my children to know the wars which I have seen." And he said, "You will lose your time because this organization will not stay more than five years." And today we have United Nations with all members of the world. A United Nations which has done so much. And I stayed there all my life. And I prevented wars. You cannot imagine what I was successful in doing by my courage. Because usually they didn't dare to do it. I said, "Go ahead. Give a telephone call." I said, "Don't let the ambassadors in. To the Secretary General. Give telephone to the head of India and to the head of Pakistan that they should meet immediately. If not, there will be a war there like in the Middle East, and the Americans, the Russians, everybody will be happy that India and Pakistan are no big countries." And they met, and there was not any problem, and they decided to have this intermediary state. And I have dozens like this by the dozens stories, which are armed now with the Nobel Peace Committee, where there are so many people who would like me to get the Nobel Peace Prize. And when I came to almost the retirement, I said to the Secretary General, "President Reagan has promised to the extreme right and to the Catholics that he will kill the United Nations." And he said, "What can we do?" I said, "You know, we have no real support, organized support by the American people. If Reagan wants to kill the UN, he will be able to do it." And I said to him, you know, there's one thing which you could do. I just learned that the American troops will celebrate the 40th anniversary of their landing in Normandy. Why don't we celebrate the 40th anniversary of the UN? Because then you can take you can tell all other governments what they want to do in Washington, and they will prevent it. He says, okay, but then you don't want retirement. I put you in charge of the 40th anniversary of the UN. So I was hooked again, and I had the 40th anniversary of the UN, and then I even got President Reagan to become a friend of Perez de Cuellar. Because I asked the Thanksgiving Square in Dallas, to whom I had rendered the service of making the year 2000 proclaimed World Thanksgiving Day, I said, look, why don't you have a great painting or a work of art which the Secretary General could give to President Reagan on Christmas? And then he had a big painting by Commager on human rights. And President Reagan with his wife came to the UN to get the gift, had dinner together in the evening, the four of them, and Reagan became a friend of the United Nations. And then I said, my God, now after the anniversary was over, I have to retire now. What am I going to do? And in the meantime, I had launched the idea, because one day a president came from a strange country, Costa Rica, and made a speech in the General Assembly that Costa Rica was offering hundreds of acres of land in a beautiful mountain to create a peace university. So I ran down and I embraced him and I said, you have come to fulfill the dream of Utant, the former Secretary General, who always said to me, Robert, there will be no peace if there's not a new education. And then they invited me to come to Costa Rica to create the University for Peace. And now I have worked there for almost 20 years for $1 a year, but being the happiest man on earth. Why? Because beyond the University for Peace, a young peasant said to me, Mr. Müller, we are now having here all this beautiful land here, acres and acres and acres, and we must sell it to divide our inheritance. Couldn't you buy it? And I said, oh, I love this land. I always go to a bench in front of an old house to dream, but I'm more than 60 years old. Why should I buy land? Oh, please, we beg you, buy the land. And I didn't want to. But then I read my last sentence in the UN on the last day where I said, I hope that someday I will live on a mountain with a magnificent view and spend the rest of my life working for peace and writing my beautiful stories of my life. And I paid them and bought it the same day. And today, Barbara, my second wife, and I, we live there in a paradise on a land which is now worth millions of dollars. It is our land with cows, with geese, with monkeys, with everything you can imagine. As a matter of fact, my wife spends more time with the animals than she spends with me. I become quite secondary in this whole affair. And here I am on this land and helping the university now, which exists, which will become a very great university, and happy to devote the rest of my life to peace on this planet. I'm very, very happy. And I know that I will live longer for a very simple reason. It is God has decided that I should keep down there. Because he's afraid of getting me upstairs and to tell him what he should do. So he has decided to keep me down there as long as possible. So this is my story. And I'm the happiest man on earth. On the 11th of March, I will be 81 years old. I feel younger than ever, We never have a drop of alcohol, not even of beer, although I come from Alsace-Lorraine where we drink beer by the tons. And I know that I will be allowed to live longer and to do plenty of more things. I'm determined that war should be totally eradicated from this planet. And they are already on the retreat. Look at the millions of people who protested against Iraq. That's another big power around the world. We do not want wars anymore, for the people say. The second one is all the militaries must disappear from this planet to become agents of peace, a police. And thirdly, we must destroy all those atomic weapons and weapons on this planet. And finally, we have to have a new education of all the children of Earth, and UNESCO has decided to do it and to have a new education for the world to be worked out in the next 5 years. And I will be around to make it sure. Thank you.